This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 27th of March, 2023, first weekend in three, where we're not seeing an emergency bailout over the weekend. Things calming a bit for whatever reason into the Friday close in the U.S. As you can see on slide two, we're back above 4,000 with positive sentiment feeding into Asia to start the week. What are we supposed to take away from this? We have some signs of concern that we'll be talking about, but just the immediate sense that nothing's about to fail or go bump in the night, allowing sentiment to bounce back. And a lot of that has to do, I'm sure, Peter, with the stabilization of, not just the stabilization, but the stabilization at low levels, relatively speaking, of interest rates. It has to be, I imagine, what most equity investors are focusing on here.
Yeah, and you saw it very clearly on Friday with the real estate and the utility sectors both rally, or industry group rallying the most, as you can see here on slide two. So the equity market is celebrating low interest rates, but I think, as we talked about, they're celebrating the wrong thing. It's natural, of course, that there is a positive reaction on lower yields because it feeds through the discount rate into these future cash flows. So, of course, it has a positive impact on equities. But we also think about the forward curve on the Fed funds rate trajectory from here. What is it signaling? And I don't have the chart with me today, but as I said to you, John, on the internal call, and also you, Ole, if you look at the U.S. leading indicators, the aggregate index is now at the same levels as it were back in the second quarter of 2018. So that's no change over a five-year period. It's extremely weak, and it's sliding into what looks more and more certain to be a recession. But I think your headline, John, with no emergency is the correct way of looking at it. There was a little bit of focus on Friday on real estate and Thursday, despite the late rebound in the U.S. session. And I think there are some interesting developments on resale. Before you take the U.S. angle, I'll just point out the European angle. There's the third largest in terms of assets publicly listed real estate company here in Europe is called Around Town, which is a German company. It's now priced at a price to book ratio of 0.15. That's basically the market's way of saying, hey, we don't trust the assets on the balance sheet has the value that you say they should have. So we cannot trust the equity numbers. And it's also, if you look at the debt numbers relative to the equity, it looks pretty stressed. And maybe in a couple of weeks from now, with the time lag, we could have the next sort of crisis. And I think Citigroup put out an interesting note this morning in Europe. They expect actually real estate price on average here in Europe could fall between 20 and 40%, give or take, wherever you want to look at the pockets, or 20 to 30%, I think it was actually. So there is this European angle on real estate. We'll have to track that. But there's also a U.S. angle, which I find very interesting, John.
Yeah, and I put that on slide three, just some perspective here. So the focus being on this whole deposit flight phenomenon, and the concern is these regional community banks. As we mentioned last week in the podcast, there are very heavy lenders into the commercial real estate sector in particular, and some sort of subdivision of the commercial real estate is especially the office or REITs or office real estate, which is really under pressure because of the work from home phenomenon. So there are a lot of these portfolios that are challenged, and one way to track this here on the Daily Shot tweet that I've passed on here, this chart of the Bloomberg Office REIT versus just the general REIT. All REITs are down. Obviously, there's been a lot of pressure from the interest rate cycle, but it's really the office REITs that are most under pressure. And with such heavy lending among these banks, and there's so many of them, and with deposits being, pulling the plug on some of these banks, that is probably where we're going to be getting some sense of crisis into the sector or with pressure points that could lead to the next shoe to drop. I've put some tickers from that Bloomberg Office REIT, so you can investigate some individual names there. Those are just roughly listed by market cap. So have a look at that. But it's also just you're seeing some general feed through. And the concern here is not so much that we're having to look for the next Lehman moment, quote unquote, or otherwise, something immediately going systemic. But this is providing, as we have mentioned, pressure on the credit front that will transmit to the real economy. The credit is the lifeblood of the economy. And we're seeing that in something like just a basic monitor of a high yield bond spread. You can see the right chart there on slide three. That's the Bloomberg high yield spread to U.S. Treasuries. making a new local high here. We were higher back at a couple of points last year, but still above 500 basis points. And that's an area where the Fed starts to get concerned a bit. So just a couple factors to track here. And then we've talked about, you know, the Credit Suisse with these tier one capital getting the bonds getting wiped out in that deal where they were shunted over to UBS. Peter, you still got some thoughts on that, and you've got the latest table up here on slide four.
Yeah, because there was a lot of focus on Deutsche Bank. They tried to calm the market on Friday with their, you know, redeeming a tier two unsecured bond they had, but it wasn't really enough. And then there was just a lot of focus on the German banks, also Commerzbank, where we can just mention around town. I think there is a increasing focus on German real estate, also Swedish banks, and Swedish real estate is in focus, of course. And the point was also, which I made in my equity note on Friday, is that if you look at the largest benchmark index for AT1 bonds, so this additional tier one capital, and you look at the mid price on yield on all these, you know, the 50 largest securities in that benchmark index, we're hovering around somewhere around 11% and 12%. So we're far exceeding the return on equity, and I think it's I sort of agree with the statement. It's just difficult, which Steen made, I should say, in our internal call. This is a dying industry. It's dying on some parameters. What is the actual fallout longer term? I don't know. Maybe it can be profitable for some, but there's this whole discussion as well in the US with deposits. I mean, should there be a private insurance market? That's typically an American angle to it. Could be the case. It could be smart, actually, on the corporate side. Again, you have a private market that is pricing the risk of a deposit flight. There are other voices in the U.S. that are considering a full state guarantee. If you go down that route, then essentially you're changing the entire privatization of money to something else, which is more like a public utility. But then, what are banks? And I think in Europe in general, I'll close it with this and some thoughts about banks. So with the AT1 bonds trading at these yields, the common equity story being so weak as it has been for European banks, you know, 3% annualized return over a decade, it's just a horrible story. And in some ways, we need a big shakeup in this banking industry. We cannot go on like this. You cannot have an industry that cannot really return the necessary, provide the necessary return on capital. Otherwise, per definition, you will die at one point.
Yeah, it's certainly the focus of the market, and it's so critical because, again, it's banks that create money, lend money into existence, and it is part of the entire economic outlook and growth cycle. All right, let's very brief on FX because I think we're the missing inspiration here. One of the main takeaways I would have is that the Japanese yen resurgence has been quite disappointing given the collapse in yield spreads to a very low yielding and essentially non-yielding Japan at the front end of their yield curve. That extended with the Dalian wave above 130. It was even above 131 before we came in to record this podcast. The dollar picture a bit mixed. We have the sense that it's not just the U.S. phenomenon with the, you know, focus on European banks, etc. You can see Eurodollar there peaked well above 108. Above 109. It's sort of back to that little breakout level around 107.50. So I would say 107.50 to 107. The figure is an area of downside reversal that you would need to get through to put a positive spin back on the dollar, and you would likely need to see more concern across the space in risk sentiment, et cetera, to see that. And then elsewhere, Ola, sort of leading into your space, I think really disappointing action in the commodity prices and in the commodity currencies, broadly speaking, given we're supposed to be having this China reopening story, which sits so poorly when we're suddenly starting to bring forward our recession calls for the rest of the world. So things like the Aussie and the Kiwi are quite weak here. But I'll let you take over on that comment on what you're looking for here.
Yeah, and just to stay on the currency front, John, it was quite interesting in the weekly commodity or the weekly cut report from the week up until last Tuesday. If you look at the FX market, it was a week where it was all over the place. But what was the red thread through the trading action was risk reduction. We saw quite a substantial reduction both in long and short positions, leaving the overall dollar short slightly lower, slightly Yeah, slightly weaker than previous weeks, but generally it really just highlights that the market is doesn't really know what leg to or what currency to stand on right now, leading to a lot of long and short liquidation. But yes, we are struggling a bit here on the currency, on the commodity front. The cut report, which is now up to date, finally after months of delays or weeks of delays, we can just see for the this was up until last Tuesday. That was in the middle of this current unfolding banking crisis, a couple of days after Credit Suisse was taken over by UBS, and we can see it's really the energy sector that's taking the brunt of the selling, very very heavy long liquidation hitting both WTI and Brent. We have to remember that the market just came out of a 5 months range-bound trading action. When you trade range-bound, you also see volatility tend to come down. That basically means if you are a hedge fund, you increase your exposure because quite often you attract volatility. And suddenly as volatility spikes and the market breaks out, it causes quite a significant reaction. And that's what we've been seeing, especially in WTI, where you can see the 71,000 lot is the weakest long since 2016. And actually more, I think we probably have to go back to 2010 to find a period where we sustained period had exposure at this week. So just look out for any change in the technical or the fundamental outlook, because it could have an impact, I was saying, right now, especially to the upside. Staying on the sector that actually received a strong bid and a strong demand, that's the precious metals. And you can see that here on slide 7. The red line on the right hand side, that is the money manager futures net position. But as you can see, we're not even back to the peak we had before the February sell off. So what we saw last week, and I think that's quite interesting, is as we hovered around that $2,000 level, the net long, as we saw on the previous slide 6, the net long rose by 25%. But actually, the bulk of that the increase in the net was due to short covering, basically shorts being reduced, not fresh longs coming into the market. And that just highlights, I think, the overall market situation right now, that we tried on three occasions to break 2,000. We failed. And that could indicate that we are in for a period of consolidation here, with a lot of recently established longs that are now looking for further support to take it higher. We believe it will eventually will break higher, but I think right now we have to be a bit cautious, because there's just simply a massive gap between what the market, where the market sees future Fed rates goes, and where the Fed is signaling they should be. And we need to see that gap start to narrow in either direction before we can get, I think we can see a sustained move to the upside.
Yeah. On the oil front, by the way, I don't know if you have to address this, of course, but I saw on oilprice.com some industry executives in the U.S. pushing back against the notion that there would be much supply growth, because they're saying, look, at these prices, we're not going to – there was already an issue around expanding production because the focus has been a return on shareholder return to shareholders rather than just gross expansion of their investments. And certainly the natural gas price and oil price is not where they need to be to meaningfully try to expand anything in operations-wise.
No, absolutely. And the projections we get on a monthly basis from the EIA regarding future shale oil production growth tends to be almost been revised lower on a monthly basis. They're very optimistic for the looking 12 months out, but as we move closer, they continue to revise lower. So it looks increasingly like the growth is not going to come from, or future growth is not going to come from the US. Obviously, leaving a lot more decision power in the hands of OPEC and OPEC Plus. And right now they've been fairly effective in their policies. Obviously, what remains to be seen whether they will step in and cut production even further if we should see a further decline from here. We had JP Morgan out over the weekend talking about the risk of WTI crude potentially going down to $60 during this current phase. So the market is very uncertain right now.
All right, we go forward to earnings. I think we previewed these last week, the earnings focus this week, Peter. But is there anything you want to pull out in today's list on slide 8?
Yeah, we have Carnival reporting today before the U.S. market open. And as you can see here on slide 8, a very depressing 5-year price chart there. We are hovering around levels we have had for almost a year, and they are essentially sitting at the lows that we had during the massive collapse there during the closure of society during the early days of the pandemic. And I've put in on the little insert there from Bloomberg on there from their default probability model. And if you look at the last 12 months, they spent almost $1.6 billion on interest, and if you compare that figure with the current market value, but you get a sense of how much of the company is just hanging in a very thin thread here because of that very big debt load, which of course is unsustainable in the longer run. They increased together with a lot of other companies, but especially all travel related companies issued a lot of debt to stay afloat and to come out on the other side. And they are expected to increase their revenue by 166%, and the operating profit EBITDA is expected to be positive $300 million or so for the quarter that ended in February, up from a loss of $900 million a year ago. So things are improving. The question is whether they're improving fast enough, or some type of a debt restructuring is still lying ahead for Carnival. The company has one of the largest, highest 1 year default probabilities in the terminal, basically among the companies with a market cap above $5 billion. So very curious, and to see or hear also what they say on the state of consumer, because this is a highly discretionary consumer item in the higher end. It's not cheap to go on a cruise ship. So very curious to hear what they say.
Yeah, and we talked about on the discretionary expenditures front that Darden Restaurants last week, and I've just seen some headlines. I didn't delve into the details, but they had a strong results and were issuing a very strong outlook. So apparently people still happy to go out to not too terribly expensive casual dining establishments in the U.S., at least as of Darden's report closure for the quarter, or cutoff for the quarter. All right, let's look at the economic data or macro calendar for the week ahead. We have the German IFO out this morning. Already before this podcast, the 2-year treasury auction is up later in the U.S. May be interesting to see the demand around that. 2s, 5s, and 7s tend to be the same week. So the 5s and 7s should be in the coming couple of days. But where the demand is after this big, markdown in yields from the banking turmoil. A Fed speaker is out speaking on the economy, and the rest of the week is pretty quiet. But we do have a couple of little points that will be that will get the market's attention. CPI out of Germany on Thursday and Friday for the Eurozone. And then you have this consumer confidence report, where it's pretty remarkable to me to see the level of where expectations are at for the cycle, getting close to the worst they've been since back in 2013, despite the fact that we've had a pretty decent deceleration in those types of inflationary items that get the most attention, certainly fuel, etc. So maybe a bit of curiosity around that figure, as well as the final Michigan sentiment survey on Friday and PCE inflation. But really it is about this long wait now until we get a sense of how this latest turmoil in the banking sector is feeding into credit, which then feeds into economic growth. So it's really not going to be hitting, if it is going to hit, until the April data cycle, and that means into May. So it's going to be an interesting wait. We'll track how things are doing, of course, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.